What is your freedom worth to you? Each of our guests had a lightbulb moment. They longed to live rather than merely exist. They smashed through their fears and programmed minds, trusting themselves, their faith, and their survival instincts. Leaving the guilt, fear, oppression, and drudgery of their past. For a brighter future. They took a brave and courageous step into freedom. This is their story of how they got a life. Welcome to Get a Life Podcast, Ex-Cult Conversations. You matter, and so does your story.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Get a Life Podcast, Ex-Cult Conversations. Today, we are here with Beth Seed. Welcome, Beth.
Hi, Cheryl. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So any of you that are following Beth on social media will have seen her PBCC Fact of the Day. And so we are here to compile her facts of the day all in one place. So you'll see different volumes of them come out. But I wanted to sit down and talk to you, Beth, on what inspired you to do this and what has been the response been like, and to also hopefully inspire other ex-members to join in the fun that we're having.
Yes, absolutely. The more the merrier. So a few things to start with. I have been shocked at like what a like almost healing experience this has been. Like, it's just kind of, it's very helpful to talk about things. I'm a talker. Anyone who knows me knows that. And so it is good to just like get it out there, talk about it a little bit. So how I actually got onto this was I had my 16th anniversary of leaving the Brethren. And I always like, that's, you know how it is, Cheryl. It's a bittersweet day. You're absolutely celebrating, but you're sad. It's just a big day. And so I did a little video this year for the first time, just like saying like, hey, you know, I'm celebrating 16 years. Like, this is exciting. And I had so many people reach out to me. And I mean, I've had it over the years, but more that day asking me questions about the PBCC, about the cult I was raised in, and they want to know more. And it got me thinking about how the Brethren are so secretive. You know, everything, we can't talk about why we do this or why we do that. I like, why is everything is so secretive? And I thought, hey, like, people want to know. I live in a very small town. That's where I grew up. And a lot of these people have literally lived next to the Brethren for their whole lives and don't know certain things. And so I thought, this could be fun. And I honestly never really planned on it actually being a daily thing until I started talking about it. And it was like, I could do this for a while at one fact a day. And it's been huge. The response has been overwhelming and super heartwarming for me because people have been very kind. I hate the way I look and sound on camera, but people have been great. They seem to love learning new things and have even said,
I love the sassiness.
So
I absolutely love the sassiness that comes with it. Like, it's just, you know, you're sitting there watching them and just, you've got some remark back to what you just said, and it just makes you giggle from head to toe. It is very healing. It is so healing.
It really is. And I try and keep them, for one thing, I try and keep them short because we're busy. People are busy. They don't have time to watch a 10-minute dissertation, you know, or 20 minutes or whatever. But I also try and keep them a little lighthearted, like once in a while. Oof, I had one where I was kind of a puddle by the end of it. But for the most part, I try and keep them fairly lighthearted and just kind of have fun with it. If we don't laugh about it, we probably will cry. So we might as well just kind of chuckle about it as we go, you know? So I find it fun. It's been very, very healing, I think. So I do try and keep them lighthearted just because I feel like there's a lot of heaviness in the world. And so we might as well laugh about it or else we'll cry. So and it seems to be working. People do seem to enjoy it, and I love hearing the responses from people. Sometimes the quote unquote worldly people's responses just crack me up, because it's so fun to see their take on something, you know, and what they thought. And it's like, oh, this is funny. You know, this is good stuff. So yeah.
And do you find that a lot of the outsiders, like not even ex-members, but outsiders, like community members, are shocked by things that they've seen but never been able to have an explanation for, and now they're like, oh, okay. And their narratives begin to change.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yes. 100%. I have definitely seen that, where they're like, oh yeah, I always wondered about that, you know, and that makes sense now. And you know, it's one of the things, like I really try hard to make it clear, like I do not think that all brethren are bad people. Yeah. I would never want anyone to think that, but they are led by some very bad people. And because of that, they have some very sick ideas in their minds. And I just, you know, my thing always is, if you're essentially supporting them and not questioning them and things they're doing and saying, they take that as support. They take that as support. They take that as you agree with what they're doing. And it's like, but do you, if you really understood the level and the lengths they'll go to, do you want to support that kind of group? Because I don't know.
And to me, you're enabling them, right? We have to stop enabling those at the very top, right?
Yes.
There is, I mean, I don't consider my family bad people. There's some good Christians in there, but they've all been given these rose colored glasses that say hails across them. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to take these rose colored glasses off so that our families and everybody else's family are given the opportunity to be able to see that they have a choice. And I've said this before in many other podcasts. Once you have a choice, if you're looking and you're liking what you're seeing, then stay. But
exactly. If you're not,
and you know everything that's going on, I want you to know you have a choice to leave.
Exactly. And that's, I think I had touched on it in one of my videos where I said, like, I would never straight out tell somebody they should leave the brethren. I would never do that, because I know how hard it is, and you have to want to. But I also just think, if you're questioning things, here's some more information you should have, just so you know, like, this is a few more details you might want to consider. Because I do think, like, there was a lot of things I didn't know that I didn't think about when I was leaving. And I wish I'd had this resource, you know, where it was like, I don't know. I just think, I think it's good to get more information out there. And it's why I hope more people will do things, you know, that more people will actually consider doing videos and things like that. Like, getting voices out there, it's a good thing.
There cannot be too many voices. And this is what I'm saying. Like, so Beth is on TikTok. I'm on TikTok. I know Ben Woodbury is on TikTok. Ann Hamilton is on TikTok. There's a lot of vocal voices on there, but we need more. We need more. So if you're willing to talk and you don't have a TikTok account, that is my suggestion, is make a TikTok account, reach out to us. We'll help you with algorithm and all that kind of stuff. Don't do what I did, but do what Ben did. But it's getting all of our voices out there. We need as many as we can get. And it, again, like, reiterate what Beth said, this isn't about taking down anything. This is about exposure. The amount of people that have come forward just off of Ben's TikTok, and the people that have messaged me on my TikTok, and I'm sure, like, the amount of people that have messaged you, Beth, like, it's allowing teachers to come forward. It's allowing hundreds of people who have worked for them. Horrible. I think that's the biggest thing that I get blown away at, is the amount of people who have worked for them that have been just horrifically I don't even know what the word is, horrifically abused.
Yes.
They want these videos to be able to understand who they were actually working for and Agreed. Get the same kind of healing that we get.
Yep. Yep, exactly. Because it is, I mean, I have heard a lot of very uncomfortable stories from people that worked for Brother in Businesses and were not well treated at all. Yeah. And you're right. It is a sort of healing for them too, because then they're understanding more about this group. And it's like, the more we talk, the more it gets out there, the more exposure there is. This is a good thing. They've been a very secretive group. They've done everything they can to stay under the radar. And I think it's good to just get it out there a little bit.
The exposure yeah. brings accountability.
And, yes.
I've always said, like, justice is served in many, many ways. Accountability comes in many different ways. We've already had reports back at, they're even changing how they're praying right now. Whether that will stay, who knows? But this insider, and I'll actually do a video diary of this, but we had an insider that said, like, you know, what you guys are touching on, they're hearing and they're trying to make adjustments. Whether it's to save face, it doesn't matter. But I'm glad to know that, you know, right now I'm getting a break from being, you know, prayed to be removed from the planet.
Yes.
Again, it's like exposure can give us accountability in many different forms. And so if exactly. you are someone like Beth, like Anne, like Ben, I'm trying to think of everybody who's out there talking right now. If you're willing to do that, please reach out to us and we'll help you if you don't know where to start. But we need the voices. We need the people. And man, I was just over the moon happy when I started seeing your fact of the days and I like messaged you right away. I'm like, you need to do TikTok. Can you do a TikTok account? Because it reaches so many people far and wide all over the country.
Yes. Yes. And that's the thing too. You know, I really hope people will keep watching and share them, you know, comment, share. It pushes up the exposure, and the more people that see it, the more people that become aware, and that's a good thing. That's yeah. what we like.
Yeah. You don't have to message us and ask us to share as much as you
just
can.
Just do it. Yeah. Yep. I want it out there. Yep. It's yours to do with what you like. So
What would you say to the people? So I'm just going to go on the other side of things now. What would you say to those that think that we can't get over this or that they don't understand why we do what we do? What would you say to those people?
So it's really funny because this is actually something you do get a lot. Like,
yeah, you
know, well, can't you just exactly get over
move on.
And my personal feeling, and everybody is different. As long as I have family that is still in this cult, I can't get over it.
Yeah.
Because I will never not miss them and want them to be part of my life. And because of this cult, they can't be. And so it's like grieving someone over and over and over again, but you never completely are able to move on, if you want to say that, like a normal loss, because it's just a reopening of the wound over and over and over, because they're there. They're right within reach, and we just can't have access to them because we don't go to their church. And that is literally one of the hardest things for me, is I'm like, I'm still the same person. Literally the only difference is I don't want to go to your church. I don't want to follow those beliefs. You know, how many worldly families do you have where kid was raised Catholic and decides to leave the Catholic church and go to another church? Does the family completely cut off contact with them? Maybe sometimes, but not all the time. That is not a straight out Catholic principle. Whereas yeah, this,
not a rule that came from above.
Yes. Whereas this with the brethren, it is actually a rule that no, they do have to not have contact with us. And it's like, so no, I won't get over it, because I'm not, until everyone that wants to be free is free And until people are aware of what really goes on, there's still more to talk about.
Yeah. I feel too when someone comes on TikTok or anywhere on any social media and says, I've never heard of them before. Then I'm like, yeah, we got to still talk. We still need to talk. It needs to become a household name. It's just one of those things that, same like you, I want to be able to die peacefully this lifetime. I want to get to the end of my life and know that I touched absolutely every brick of that wall that they built and know that I tried everything. And it is a group effort. I cannot stress this enough. This is a group effort. So if you feel like you just need to move on, and then that's fine. You just do your life. But I don't think that we need to be told to move on, because to me, I've moved on quite well, but I will never just turn my head and turn the cheek, so to speak, on the family that is in there and they don't know what they're in, because these people have no clue what they are in. They don't know. They do not know.
They don't. And I think, like, even when I first left, I was so naive about a lot of the things, you know, that were going on. And so it's like, no, you don't actually see everything that's going on when you're in it. It's once you're out and you're free and all of a sudden, you know, it's like the blinders come off, like you say, those rose colored glasses, and suddenly you see things a lot more clearly. And it's like, And I actually had someone, back to your comment about people saying, I've never heard of them before. I had someone say to me, I feel so naive. I didn't know they even existed. And I said, don't feel naive. They have done a great job of flying under the radar for years. It's just really been since you started this podcast, since you started talking, all of a sudden it's gotten, I think, more of us talking. And it's kind of inspired a lot of the rest of us to, hey, we're going to talk about this now. We want to be honest about what's going on. And so here goes. I'm just putting it out there. It's not going to be pretty all the time. No. But it's the truth, and it's my truth. And it was the first 21 years of my life. And I can't pretend that didn't exist. It made me who I am.
And I think it is so important to go back to saying, like, how it got you talking. I believe every single person who feels like they want to get up and talk, just because there's a handful of us talking doesn't mean that there's not room for you. There's room for you. We could have 300 of us all talking all at once on social media, and we still wouldn't cover the ground that we want to cover. So, and I believe every single person gives a unique flavor. Like, Beth, yours are so... Even when you're in tears, you're such a humble, authentic human being. You're like a living hug. That's what I want to cut. You're like a living hug. That when you talk, from the top of my head to the tips of my toes, I feel you. And that's what makes this work, is when we get into our feels and we're deep caring mode, and it just spreads, right? This isn't about bashing anybody. This is about exposure, exposure, so that we can have accountability and change. I don't care if they don't fall down, right? Like, it doesn't, that's not about that. We just need change. It just has to have change.
Yep. Do better. Like, if you still want to be a thing, great. Yeah, but like, you've got to do better on some of these major issues.
Yeah. And I mean, it is my belief. I do believe it's too diseased to change, right? I do believe that. But at the same time, miracles happen, and none of us should be judging any kind of a miracle that could happen in here. And so what our job is just to sit back and make sure that we are given the information that the way we need to do. And plus, it is healing. We get healing on top of it. I heal a piece of me every single time I come on here. 100%. Right.
Yep. Cause you talk it out, you hear other people's perspective, and it helps. It helps. And sometimes it's as simple as, oh my gosh, you went through that too, or you know what I'm talking about. It helps. It heals. Yes.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Oh, thank you so much, Beth.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
So blessed to have you step forward And
you.
To anybody who's thinking of coming on board and doing this, please reach out to us. We will help you. It's very much needed, very much needed. So this podcast today is going to have her first set of videos attached to it. And then we'll just keep on adding her volumes, just like we're doing with Ben's TikToks. So thank
Sounds
you.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And until next time, everyone, take care. Much love to you all.
It's January 29th, guys. 16 years since I left the cult I grew up in. The Plymouth Brethren Christian Church. Scariest thing I've ever done. Whew. Everything was new and terrifying. Everyone was new and terrifying. But what a ride it's been. I've met some of the best people, and I'm so lucky to have amazing family and friends in my corner. I still miss my family so much every day, and I hope and pray that someday I will have them all in my life. But in the meantime, I'm so very blessed. 16 years, jeez, and I haven't aged a day. Good morning. So after yesterday's post about it being 16 years since I left the cult I grew up in, I had a few people message me with questions about the cult, and I thought, maybe I should do like a fact of the day or something about the PBCC. So here goes. There was so many that I could use for my first fact of the day, but I'll start with, so they have an early morning meeting on Sundays that they call the Lord's Supper. I, as a little kid, always called it bread and wine meeting because you have bread and wine, communion, basically. And so everyone there takes a piece of bread from a loaf of bread that's made with holy hands, also known as a brother and woman. And it starts with the women and then goes to the men. And you all take a piece, then it's time for the wine. And everyone takes a sip of wine from the same cup, including little babies. So like you're 6 months old and can barely even sit up, and your mom is very helpfully holding the cup of wine up to you, and you get to take a sip of wine. It's amazing those kids didn't like sleep for the rest of the day when I think of it. But anyway, so fact of the day. Bread and wine meeting. Now you know. Good morning. It's time for PBCC fact of the day two. Okay, so there's so much I could discuss about PBCC funerals, burials, but I'll just leave you with this. At least in the area where I grew up, and I think it was all over the US like this, so when you die, the funeral director prepares your body, and then off we go in the Suburban to pick up grandma in her casket and bring her back to my brother and sister-in-law's house, where grandma and her casket just hang out in the dining room until it's time for her funeral the next day. Yeah, that actually was my grandma. That's what happened. And that's what happened with everyone. Not to my brother's house, but to like some family member's house, maybe even your own house. So your memory of dad is him in a coffin in your living room. Cool. Very cool. Good morning. Time for PBCC fact of the day three. So as a girl or woman in the Brethren, I was not allowed to cut my hair. Could not color it or cut it. And I also had to always wear a token in my hair. When we were in the house or in some other Brethren's house, like it had to be like a ribbon or a flower or bow or something to that effect. Always. And if you left the house, like a casual You're going shopping or something, like a little headband or scarf, like a knit head covering would work. But when we went to church, it was like a big full scarf. I have zero pictures because I left and have no contact, but someday I'll find some pictures of what scarves looked like. But anyways, these tokens, be it a ribbon when you were inside or a scarf when you were not, were so the angels would know how to find us because we were brethren and women and we needed protection. And this was the only way the angels would know that we were brethren women and needed special protection. And I remember even being told as a little girl, my mom telling me a story about, I don't remember if it was supposedly over in like Australia, England, who knows where. A story about, yep, these two little girls were walking down the street. One was a brethren girl wearing a token, and one was a worldly girl not wearing a token. And a bad man came and he abducted the worldly girl because the other girl had a token, and he probably didn't even see her because the angels probably blinded his eyes from seeing her. Yeah. So these were the kind of lovely, threatening little parables that convinced me to always make sure I had a ribbon or scarf. There you go. Fact of the day 3. PBCC fact of the day 4. Let's talk baptism. So the brethren believe that you cannot attend meeting or church unless you've been baptized. So like for a newborn baby, they can't go to meeting unless they've been baptized. And most babies, this happens like when they're about a week old. It might be longer if like say mom was poorly or baby was poorly, but normally it's a week. Like it also normally happens on a weeknight. So like I was born on Sunday and my parents wanted me to be able to attend the next week's Lord's Supper because, you know, at a week old, I would be aware of this. Of course. So I was actually baptized on Friday night. And so the baptism is done by another brethren man. Usually it's like someone more middle-aged. Like I feel like my dad was in his late 40s when he was asked to do his first baptism. And I remember him being super nervous and like he practiced the baby's name like a million times with my mom before we went. And the only ones that attend the baptism are the family of the man doing the baptizing. So like in this case, like all of us, like my dad and mom and me and my sisters went. And then the family of the baby, meaning like it's dad, mom, and baby. And if it had siblings. So in this case, it was the first child. And so the bathtub is filled. And, you know, water tested to make sure it's not too hot. And the baby is, I can't remember. I feel like the baby just had like a onesie and a diaper, you know, whatever. I can't remember. I don't think the baby had like clothes or a towel or whatever. Anyway, then my dad said something, you know, like some words like, and then I don't remember how it all went, but it was like, then in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, I baptize you. Blah, 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 the kid's name, and then swoosh, head through the water and like back out and hand the screaming newborn baby off to its mother, who's probably terrified you were going to drown her child. And that's it. You're baptized. Good to go. Now you can go to meeting and you're saved. Like, that's all it takes. Like, you're too little to even be aware of any of this happening, but like, that's it. Now you get a special place in heaven because you are a baptized member of the brethren. Blessings. So there you go. Baptisms. Good morning. It is day 5. And today, for my fact of the day about the Plymouth Brethren Christian Church, let's talk meeting rooms. So in the Plymouth Brethren, you do not call it church. It is a meeting room, or you go to meeting. You don't go to church. The only time you refer to it as church is when you are talking to the poor, uneducated, worldly people that don't know that we call it meeting. Then we call it church. Otherwise, it's a meeting room. So the Brethren meeting rooms are like very big, square, windowless buildings, and they're broken into two parts. The first part is like the foyer area lined with coat racks and hangers for you to hang your coat. There's a men's bathroom, a women's bathroom. And then, separate from that, further into the building is a big, square, dish-shaped room. So you have like a fairly steep aisle or aisles going down to the center. And this is the meeting room. And the benches all sit in a circle. And your level of importance directly correlates to how close to the center of the circle you sit. So, as would follow, women and girls are relegated to the back rows, and men and boys are closer to the center. So, like, the older, more important men, front row. Second row is like younger, probably married men, maybe not married, depending on how big the like meeting is. And then third row would be like younger still boys. And then women and girls, yeah, there's just willy-nilly. You're of no importance at all, so have at it. Sit where you want, as long as it's in the back. Don't you be trying to go up front there with the men, you unimportant little peon. Anyway, it was always quite amusing to like witness, you know, a man that felt that he should be front row heading rapidly for the front row, which of course was, you know, since it's a dish, smaller circle, there isn't as much room, and realizing there isn't room for me on the front row, and suffering the humiliating indignity of being forced to sit in the second row, even though you were so important, you should be in the front row. It was hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. And you didn't just willy-nilly decide you were a front row guy. Like, you had to be kind of like nodded down, like you were normally a second row guy, and then a front row guy was like, come on down, you're the next contestant on The Price is Right. I mean, the front row of the meeting. Anyway, it was always an adventure. There you have it. Meetings. Good morning. PBCC. Fact of the day 6. It's Sunday, so let's talk Sunday in the PBCC. So, as I mentioned in day 1, Sunday started early. 6 a.m., Lord's Supper, always said the most important meeting of the week. And considering there was meetings every flippin' day, that says a lot. But anyway, it was also said, like, if you don't attend another meeting all week, like, at least attend the Lord's Supper. So, that one where I was local, there was quite a few people there, so it would end up being like an hour to an hour and 15 minutes long. So you get home about 7:15, have a quick breakfast, and then if you were entertaining, which we did about every other week, it could sometimes be a little longer, but normally every other week, we'd be having like 20 to 25 guests for the noon meal on Sunday. So my mom would have found this out on like Wednesday or Thursday previously. She would have spent a couple days like cleaning her house top to bottom, starting to do food prep, etc. And so Sunday morning would come, and after breakfast, Dad would usually head off to bed, take a little nap, and Mom and the girls would be running around doing the last minute, like set the table, final like wipe up the bathroom, vacuum the high traffic areas that, you know, according to my mom, were filthy, even though it had been literally 24 hours since they were vacuumed. Anyway, you know, final food things, stuff like that. And then it was time for the main event, Sunday, big meeting at 10 o'clock. And you needed to look your best. If you were going to primp, that was the one, like, you need to look good. It's a big deal. And where I was, our big meeting on Sunday included brethren from Pembina, Nitshie, Winnipeg, Woodlands, Stonewall, and was usually between about 500, 600 people all together. So it was a pretty big group. And Sunday meeting at 10 o'clock would normally last an hour and 15 to an hour and a half. If some beloved brother was feeling long-winded, it might even push 2 hours. And so you'd get out of there, you'd maybe visit a few minutes, but if you were entertaining at the noon meal, you've got some people showing up for food shortly, so you need to get home and finish getting everything ready. So we would scoot on home, help mom get everything ready last minute, and that was when dad's event kind of started, because the man of the house was responsible for getting everyone drinks. And I do not mean, here, would you like a glass of water? No, no, it's noon on Sunday. I mean, you should be having alcohol. Thank you very much. And you might be saying to yourself, oh, but just the adults, right? No, 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 I can remember, like, 16, 17, going to some lovely saint's house for Sunday lunch. And no, I mean, if I wanted a Canadian and Diet Coke, sure. If I wanted a glass of port wine, no problem. You want a beer? Absolutely, have at it. All yours. Have a few. No problem. And so everyone had to have a drink before the meal, at least one, if not two. Then you'd sit down, have the meal, which was always a big meal. The expense on some of these younger households was probably huge, because you're talking about feeding, you know, like I say, 20 to 30 people, an expensive meal every couple of weeks. And so you'd have your meal, some more drinks, because, I mean, so you have to potentially drive an hour home afterwards. No problem, right? Anyway, then at about 2:30-ish, it would be time for everyone to move on, because it was time for the next meeting. So off we'd go to another meeting. This one was a little shorter, usually about, like, I don't know, 45 minutes to an hour long. You get done with that. And then, like, in my younger years, I remember that being the end of the meetings for the day. But then when I was, like, probably 10, 12 years old, it was said that the Lord's Day, Sunday, needed to be filled with the Lord. So we needed another meeting. So then we would have another meeting at, like, 4:35 o'clock. And you'd finally be done with meeting and dressed up clothes, which I can get into in more detail at another time, at about 5:30, quarter to 6. It was a long day. And then you potentially were going out for supper that night to another brethren's house, where you would be sitting on a folding chair if you were a girl. That's another topic we'll get into more. Anyway, Sunday was not a very relaxing day, we'll just say that. It was actually quite tiring, and by the end of it, you were just ready to be done. Day of rest, not so much. Anyway, there's Sunday in a nutshell. So, in response to Rachel's question about weddings and the brethren, weddings have changed a million times just in my lifetime. So I remember the first time being that I remember a wedding was like 1993, and the weddings were very simple. The most important thing is the dresses have to be pure white. It shows the purity of the bride. They are not supposed to be off-white, ivory, anything like that. They must be floor length, and they must have sleeves. If a bride gets a sleeveless dress, it needs to have like a jacket, shawl, something like that. There also must be a veil. So as far as hen nights and stag do's, not really. I remember when my sister-in-law got married, like, we got together and went and picked out her dress together, but, you know, there might be a very small, like, get-together of close friends that have, like, a very basic wedding shower, but that's the extent of it. As far as bachelor parties, no, not at all. If there is, they're certainly not talked about, because that would be considered very naughty. As far as honeymoons, no. Normally, the extent of a honeymoon would be like when there's special meetings, where they're like over a weekend or something like that. They're usually held monthly, and so like the month after you get married, you'd be invited to said special meetings, and that would be your quote-unquote honeymoon. So, not really a honeymoon, because it involves going and staying with some other brethren in some random place, and you might literally be on a cot. So, happy honeymoon. And, yeah, that's pretty much the extent of it. Good morning. Time for your next fact of the day. So today will be a quick one, and it is just to say the brethren do not allow pets. Growing up, I was not allowed to have a dog, a cat, anything of the sort. And from what I learned, they were allowed at one time, and then in like the early 70s, the leader, Jim Taylor Jr., at that time, had suddenly decided pets were wicked, and literally people had to get rid of their pets within like 24 hours. Just here to tell you, if someone came to me and said I had to get rid of my cat tomorrow, I would be like, peace out. Don't care about your religion. Bye. I'm going to hang with my animal. Thank you very much. I like her more than people most of the time. So anyway, no pets allowed. So in response to this question, I don't know if you mean if someone was to like visit their house or visit their church, but either way, I guess it's about the same. So if you were to like go and knock on my dad and mom's door, they would open the door, but they probably wouldn't invite you in. And like if someone needs to come in, like say to service their furnace or I don't know, like they can come in, but they're not invited to eat, drink, anything like that. If they're going to be there a long time, my mom would sometimes make them food, but they have to eat it separately, like in a separate room. So it has to be very separate because they are the dirty worldly people. As far as if you tried to go to the church, that would be a no. It's supposed to be an open church, but the doors are locked when all the saints are in. And if you tried to go in, they would not allow you to come in. You can sometimes, like if you show real true interest in joining the church, they will sometimes allow you to attend a gospel on Sunday, but you have to be very, very serious. And very few people have managed to actually pull that one off.
Good morning for day 7 of my PBCC fact of the day. Let's talk some terms. So I could probably do a lot of videos on random Plymouth Brethren terms, but I'll start with just a few basic ones. So the first one that you probably already heard me say a time or two is worldly. Brethren use that to refer to people. There's worldly people, which is probably you, you naughty you. But that's people that have never been in the Brethren. But also something else can be worldly. Like if I were to attend a movie, that would be worldly. So worldly basically means it's of the world. It's not Brethren. So that's a really common one you'll hear used. And then the next one I'm going to talk about is, well, it's kind of a twofer because it's confined and shut up. And they basically mean one and the same. It's where you are either in trouble with the church, so you're kicked out, or like in my case, when I first left, I was confined or shut up, because it basically means like there's still hope for you. Like they're still hoping you're gonna get right, per se. So like in the case of like when I was really little, my parents got in trouble with the church and were confined. And for people like that, that don't choose to be leaving the church, they're essentially kicked out because they did something wrong in the church's eyes. It's a really crummy position to be in because you are not supposed to associate with Brethren. Like you can't attend meeting, you can't talk to Brethren, you're barely supposed to even wave at them if you see them on the street, but you also aren't supposed to associate with worldly people either. So it's a very lonely position to be in if you're someone that wants to go back. Then the next one that's next level bad on the going to hell train is being withdrawn from. So being withdrawn from means you are really bad and you can still get right, but there's not so much hope for you. Like you're probably well on your way to the going to hell train. So like when my parents, well, my dad, not my mom, called to tell me I was being withdrawn from, he first said to me, are you happy with the path you've chosen? And I said, yes. And he said, okay, well, the Brethren no longer feel they can walk with you, so you are being withdrawn from. And I had said to him, okay, like that term really means nothing to me. That's a brethren term, and I'm not brethren, so I don't care that I'm being withdrawn from. But then I did ask, like, what is the basis? The brethren are saying they can no longer walk with me on. And the basis, which is always their basis for separation, is 2 Timothy 2, verse 2. They claim that that is their, well, just 2 Timothy 2, pretty much the whole thing, is their basis for separating from the world. And so once that was done, I am very bad. I have very little contact with any brethren. My family has completely cut off contact with me. So there's a few terms for you. I'll have more.
Hi, Rachel. So in response to your question about the weddings, they always have to be on Tuesday. Don't ask me why. I've never understood. I feel like I asked my mom this about 99 times in my life and never got a clear response, but they have to be on Tuesdays. That is an absolute requirement. Weddings in the Plymouth Brethren Christian Church have to be on Tuesdays. As far as, is it an all-day event? This has changed so much just in my lifetime. So the first wedding I remember going to was in 93. That one was like in the morning. And I feel like the reception, if you wanted to call it that, was like people stopping by the house of the bride. And like, that was kind of an all-day thing. Like, you just kind of had food and snacks and treats and whatever. But then, for some reason, they got moved to, like, now the weddings have to be, like, late evening, like, the same time as the regular meetings, which would have been, like, 7:30, 7:45 at night. And so then, no, it wasn't an all-day event, because you would finish up meeting at, like, 8:30 after the bridal meeting and, like, a late supper for the family. There was no, like, big reception, anything like that. Then when my brother and sister-in-law got married in 1999, they majorly broke the rules and they got married at 5 o'clock at night. And so then after their wedding at like 6 o'clock, the immediate family and some friends went back to like the bride's home and had supper, kind of little celebration, if you will, reception, you could call it. Then the weddings had moved to like 3 p.m. for a little while. Then they had moved as early as noon. The last I heard, they were back to like mid-afternoon or 5 p.m. So it seems to kind of vary. I'm not really sure what changes the timing of it. I'm sure it's whatever their, you know, leader feels is the thing to do at the time. But anyway, not generally an all-day event. Who actually goes to the reception, quote unquote, is very restricted. Like, you can't just have like a big party with all sorts of people. Like for my sister's wedding, which was right before I left, like it could be immediate family. And by the way, the groom's family doesn't normally attend if he's from out of town. So in her case, her groom was from Seattle, so it was just his brother with him. None of his, like, his mom, dad, grandparents, siblings, no, not at all. So it's very weird that way. It's just the bride's side of the family, generally. And we could have, like, I feel like two other brethren families could attend. And then we had a like friend of me and my sister's that the only reason she was able to come was because we listed her as a helper, which basically meant, like, she's the one putting the food on the table and making sure, like, everyone has drinks, etc. Like, basically the running the party, if you will. So anyway, weddings have changed a ton. So I've been out 16 years. They probably changed a million times since then, but they are still on Tuesdays, and I'm sure they will always be on Tuesdays, and I am sure I will never know why.
Good morning. For today's Plymouth Brethren Christian Church Fact of the Day, I will tell you a little bit about growing up in the church. So I grew up with no radio, no television, no pre-recorded music at all, no cell phones, no computers. Technology was very bad. We couldn't even have cordless phones in our house. And then somewhere around like the late 90s, the Lord turned a corner, as he is wont to do, and cordless phones became okay, but you still couldn't have cell phones, radios, CD players. Yes, I'm that old. TVs, computers, anything like that. Very bad. Well, then somewhere around like the, I don't know, 2005, 6, 7, 8, somewhere in there, it was like it kind of dawned on them that, hey, it's getting harder and harder to do business without computers. So the Lord turned another corner and they started being able to use computers and cell phones. And when I left, I had just gotten my first Plymouth Brethren issued cell phone. I didn't keep that very long, by the way. A lot of handy dandy tracking software in those buggers. But anyway, they very closely monitor like the websites you visit and things like that. They do all seem to now, from what I can see, they do listen to some music, but I think a lot of it is like their own. I don't know, people that have left more recently than me would know a lot more about that, but they seem to have embraced technology in a pretty big way for people that considered it literally a sign of the devil in the 90s. So anyway, another little fact of the day, and you learn something new. The Lord turns corners. Who knew? Our one unchanging God. Yeah, he changes just for the brethren. There you go. This morning for my Plymouth Brethren Christian Church fact of the day, I'm going to talk a little bit about separation. And separation is kind of a complex topic to get into. Honestly, I try to keep these videos short, and separation can turn into a very long topic. So I'll try to break it down here into the most basic thing. So separation is talked about a lot with the brethren. They will tell you that they believe that they need to keep separate from anyone who does not attend the Lord's Supper with them. And their basis behind that, they have a few scriptures, but the one they love to use the most is 2 Timothy 2, verse 19. And I actually went on their website. If you Google Plymouth Brethren Christian Church and then click FAQs, they have one that is called What is Involved in the Doctrine of Separation. And there you can look at the scriptures that they reference. And their basis of these scriptures is they will not eat or drink. So like if you're, when I went to public school for just a few years, we, all the brethren kids had to sit at a separate table. And I believe they still, like even at their private schools that they have now, the worldly teachers are not allowed to eat with the children. And that is strictly forbidden and enforced. So they believe strongly in the concept of separation. And they, the scriptures that I read that they focus on talk a lot about unequally yoked, believer and non-believer. That is, seems to be kind of their basis. And they would never say this, but to me, I read it as, it's not, how can you say that I am not a believer? That is why you won't eat or drink with me, is because you're saying I'm not a believer. Well, I am. I believe in God. I believe in Jesus Christ. But I don't believe in your man of God, Bruce Hales. I don't believe in any of your quote-unquote men of God. And so the brethren basically are saying that since I don't, they consider me to be an unbeliever. And so, like, my parents would not sit down at a table and eat or drink with me. They would not break bread with me, per se. And this is something that I personally really struggle with, because I straight out asked my mom one day, so you can break bread with the man who sexually abused me, and that's okay, but you can't with me. There's no logic behind it as far as I'm concerned. I do not agree with this practice in any way, shape, or form. I think it's wrong, and everything about it is disgusting. But they hold very firmly to separation, keeping separate brethren and non-brethren. So there's the basics of separation, the very, very, very basics. Someday maybe I'll do an 8 million hour long video about separation. Hi everybody. For today's PBCC fact of the day, I have one that I get asked about all the time. Let's talk marriages.
arranged, not arranged. So I always tell people this is complicated, and I'm kind of hoping some of my other ex-Plymouth Brethren cohorts will chime in with their thoughts on all of this. So, first of all, with marriages, they absolutely cannot be mixed race. You have to be the same race. This is not optional. And obviously, the Brethren do not believe in same-sex marriage. So then we get into the, are they arranged or not? And the reason I say it's complicated is, so say you're a 20-year-old girl, you meet a 20-year-old guy, you really like him, he really likes you, yep, this is a thing, you decide you want to get married, and as long as it's okay with the leader, cool, you're good to go, all set. Get married happily ever after. Divorce is absolutely off the table, so best of luck to you. And that's all good. But you found a guy, fell in love, it's gonna be happily ever after, and the leader says, nope. Then it's nope. You're not getting married. Sorry about your luck. Hope you find someone else you like, and the leader approves that guy, because this other one, nope, you're not getting married. Then the part where I always get a little on the are they arranged part is, so I always think of like my sister, for example. She was older when she got married, at least in the PBCC world. She was 29. And, you know, was the marriage arranged? No, not exactly, but it's more of a, here, we're having special meetings, because there are special meetings somewhere every month, and you're going to these special meetings, and this guy is going to these special meetings, and you guys should talk. Yeah, like, and by talk, we mean figure out that you're going to fall in love forever, and yeah, we'll support it. So, like, if you absolutely decided you didn't like this guy, could you say, no, I don't want to marry him? Yeah, but then option B is probably not going to be on the table for you, and you'll probably be single forever. So sorry about your luck there. So that's where I say it's a little bit complicated, because are you specifically told you have to marry this guy? No, but also if you're not given any other options, you kind of got to marry this guy. Oh, and if you don't get married, you remain living at home with your parents. So, like, 37 years old and you're not married, you're still living at home with mom and dad. And personally, that sounds terrible to me. And I think it's why, you know, a lot of them do end up kind of settling in a relationship. Because option B is to live at home with mom and dad forever. And that's not the most fulfilling life, at least in my mind. I mean, if that's what you want to do, hey, go for it. If you're happy doing that, great. But if you don't have a choice but to do it, I don't know. Just seems to take some of the fun out of it to me. So that's the story with marriages. Like I say, it's complicated. Oh, and weddings have to be on Tuesday. I don't know why. I asked. Never really got a clear answer. Something about like X number of days after the Lord's Supper, but I don't remember if that was even true or if I made that up in my mind, because who knows? None of it made sense. Anyways, but weddings are on Tuesdays. Marriages are kind of sort of arranged. The end. Hey, everybody. For today's video, I was trying for the longest time to come up with a cool, catchy title or what I was going to call this or what, how to even describe this. And I finally decided I don't know what to call it. So I'm just going to say I am going to tell you a little piece about my early childhood. This is not unique to me. This is something that happens to lots of brethren, but it is my story. So when I was 8 years old, my dad was actually one of the local leaders for the Brethren. Didn't mean that he had any real decision-making power or anything. It was basically when you're a local leader, you're kind of in charge of making sure that the local flock, if you will, is following the rules set out by the world leader. So when I was like 5, 6, 7, 8, my dad was one of these leaders. And so on March 31st, 1995, I was 8 years old. It was a Friday night. We had supper, and there was always about an hour in there between supper and needing to leave for meeting. And so all four of us kids, my brother and me and my two sisters, we all had headed upstairs to our respective rooms. My sister that was 5 years older than me, we shared a room. And I remember hearing shortly after this, someone had come to the door, but I wasn't really aware of what was going on. Like I say, we were upstairs, who knows, playing games, don't know what we were doing. Anyway, I remember hearing my mom coming up the stairs, and it's funny how the little things stick in your brain. My mom has really bad arthritis, and so she always relied heavily on the handrail, and it always made a little clicking sound, and I remember hearing it and thinking, why is she coming up? This isn't normally a time she would come upstairs. And she stood in the middle of the hallway and said, kids, can you come out here? I need to talk to you. And she stood there and said, Dad and I, I'm sorry, geez. Huh, I got to get it together here. Dad and I are being confined tonight. And I was 8 and didn't really understand the consequences of this. But she said, she's like, do you want to go to meeting? We can't, but you can. And so my brother, who was the oldest, and my oldest sister, they would have been in their mid-teens at the time, said they wanted to go. But my sister, Kathy, and I decided to stay home. And it was an awful, terrible time. My dad and mom were downstairs. I could hear them in the bedroom talking and crying. And I kind of just wandered the house, not knowing what to do with myself. And then my brother and sister got home from meeting, and they said, yep, Dad was confined. And my grandpa and grandma were actually withdrawn from at this meeting, because my grandpa tried to stand up for my dad, and it was considered wrong, and so they were withdrawn from. And so it was just a short time after that that the priest showed up, the new priests, and they said, you know, told my dad and mom, yep, you know, you have been confined, and we think that it would be best if your children remained with the Brethren. So they can stay with you tonight, but then tomorrow they need to go to other Brethren's homes. And so it was an awful night. I'll never forget it. And so we packed up our stuff, and the next day my brother and I were sent to live with my uncle and aunt. And they had two children still at home, a boy and a girl. And my oldest sister was sent to live with an older married cousin and his wife and children. And my sister Kathy, that I was closest to, was sent to live with another brother and family. And it was really awful. And I remember asking the one priest, how long do you think this will be? And he said, oh, probably a week, maybe a little less. And in my little 8-year-old brain, I thought, oh, I can handle a week. No big deal. A couple months later, I ran away back to my parents' house. And I remember just strolling in the door and telling my mom, yeah, I'm back. Kind of over this. This was only supposed to be a week and I want to come home now. And after some discussion with her and my dad, I was informed that, well, you know, we know you want to come home, Beth, but the only really right place for you is with the brethren. And they sent me back. And 3.5 years later, just after my 12th birthday, my parents were allowed to come back to the brethren, and we were allowed to go home. Some people call it illegal fostering. I call it hell. It's a horrible practice of splitting up families, and it's just one of the things they do. And I'm sorry, I try and keep these a little more entertaining, but I feel like people need to understand the truth behind them, behind the smiles and the quote-unquote good people. This is the doctrine that they follow. And it's hell. So, I will try and be happier tomorrow. Good morning. So, last Sunday for my PBCC Fact of the Day, I told you about the day and how Sundays went. So today, I'm going to talk to you about clothes. What we wore on Sundays, because Sundays were the most important day of the week. This was stressed to us over and over and over again. So myself personally, for that early morning meeting at 6 a.m., I think for about the last 5 years that I was brethren, I wore the same thing to every single early morning meeting, and it was my most comfy sweater and skirt that I could find, because it was early and I was always cold and I just wanted to be at home. And so that never changed. But when it came time for the main event, the big 10 o'clock meeting, women and girls, that's when you pulled out all the stops. Like, that was when your Sunday best came into play in a big way. And the brethren are very, very much keeping up with the Joneses kind of folks. Brand names are important. Having the best, the newest, the coolest is important. And Sunday is the day to show off. Not that they would ever call it that, because they are not prideful people. That's silly. So anyways, we would spend careful time picking out our Sunday outfits, and from the scarf on our head to the clothes we wore to the shoes we wore, it all was carefully coordinated to make sure that we looked our best. And so for women and girls, that meant your biggest scarves, of course, with make sure that brand name is showing in the back so everyone can see how fancy you are. And then a nice shirt, skirt, dress, something like that. And then shoes, obviously. And my personal favorite, not pantyhose. The absolute spawn of Satan, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, wore them all freaking day long. Pantyhose are not comfortable. I have not worn a pair since I left, by the way. I will go out of my way to make sure that my outfit does not ever require pantyhose again, because they are terrible. They are uncomfortable. They are hateful. And in the summer, when it's 90 degrees, they're hot. Very hot. And so, like, on a Sunday when we were entertaining, I would sometimes, like, as soon as I got home from the main meeting to, like, help mom get ready for the noon meal, I would run up to my room and take them off, because it was like, oh, blessed relief. But then I had to put them back on for the next meeting, because heaven forbid I go without. So those were the most hateful thing. But at least women had a little bit of, like, choice in what we wore. So it could at least make us feel pretty I mean, if we could get over the pantyhose thing. Men and boys, on the other hand, white shirts, black pants, that's their Sunday outfit. From like as young as 2 years old, that is what men and boys wore all day Sunday. White shirt, black pants, the end, that's it, that's all. No blue jeans or something wicked like that. Those were never supposed to go to meeting, but definitely not on Sunday. So, if you ever see a sea of white shirts on a Sunday and ask yourself, what the heck? Yeah, it's not an optional thing. They have to wear white shirts on Sunday. So there you have it. That's what we wore. Sunday best.
Good morning. Today for my PBCC fact of the day, I am going to talk a little bit about schools. Schooling in the Brethren has changed a ton, just in my lifetime, which I know is getting to be kind of long, but still. Anyway, so back in the day, Brethren could always go to public school. It was no big deal. And way, way back in the day, like, I feel like 50s, 60s, somebody will maybe correct me, but it might even have been into the 70s, Brethren, men at least, could attend university. However, like so many things, that changed. So by the time that I started school in the late 1900s, also known as 1991, I went to a public school for kindergarten, first and second grade. And then starting in third grade, I went to a little one-room schoolhouse just a block away from my house. It was through the public school system, but it was only Brethren children there. We had one teacher, the amazing Mrs. Julie Johnson, who the things she saw and dealt with. Strong lady. One of my heroes, for sure. She was there for some of the worst years of my life, and anyway, that's a whole nother story. But, so one room schoolhouse, and I went there for grades third through eighth grade. Then, when I was done with eighth grade, I was homeschooled, ninth through 12th. And I consider myself to be one of the lucky ones, because I had a very, very smart mother. Brilliant, actually, and she did not shirk in her teaching duties. She took it very seriously, and I hated every minute of it. And if I had known how much I'd be grateful that she forced some of this stuff down my throat, I'd feel a little bit bad for how much I hated it at the time. But anyways, so I graduated with a diploma from a like distance school. So now the Brethren have their own schools. One School Global, I believe is what it is. It is a private school. It is very expensive. They wear uniforms, things like that. That was not a thing when I was a kid, but now it is. They still have their very strict separation rules, all of that, but they do still have worldly teachers, because Brethren can't go to university now. So they can't become teachers, they can't become doctors, etc. So they've kind of tied their hands, and I'm just waiting for the Lord to turn a corner on that and university to start being allowed again, because at some point they're going to recognize that, hey, whew, these worldly teachers might actually be showing our kids that worldly people aren't that bad, and whew, can't be having that. So it'll be interesting to watch how much that changes. But anyways, yes, I went to public school for a few years, then a little one-room schoolhouse, then homeschooling, and that was the extent of my schooling. No universities, they're wicked, don't know why, but they are. And that's it, schooling in a nutshell. Good morning. For today's Plymouth Brethren Christian Church fact of the day, let's talk about Christmas. So you would think that a church that's called Plymouth Brethren Christian Church would celebrate Christmas. and you would be wrong. Absolutely not. So when I was growing up, we did not have a Christmas tree, did not have Christmas presents, did not celebrate Christmas in any way, shape, or form. It was just a normal day. And we were not allowed to wish anyone Merry Christmas. We were actually told to not reference like the season. So if we were going to say anything, we could say Happy Holidays. That was the extent of it. So there was no celebration of Christmas at all. And I remember I was probably like 17 or 18 and my sister Kathy and I bought like a 12-inch fiber optic Christmas tree that we put on the landing of our stairs. And my mom was like, whatever. And my dad nearly had a coronary. And between the two of them, they finally decided that it could sit there, but it had to absolutely be hidden away if we had company or anyone over. And we enjoyed it thoroughly, you know, our huge 12-inch fiber optic tree. But anyways, I also remember, so my dad and mom owned the repair shop, auto repair shop in Pembina, which was the town right by where I grew up. And it had two big windows on the front. And my older sister, Linda, and I used to decorate those windows for all the seasons, spring, summer, fall, winter. And this one year we took down fall at the beginning of December. And we're putting up winter, and we, you know, had fake snow in the bottom like we always did, and we had a fake poinsettia, and we always hung up streamers, and I decided, very wicked, to go with Christmas colors, red and green, and we hung those up, and I can't remember if I wrote Happy Holidays on the window in window paint or a wreath. I feel like it was probably Happy Holidays, because my artistic skills are just not quite to a wreath. But anyways, my dad actually got a priestly visit over that. The local priest came and told him that the window was too Christmassy and needed to change. So that had to get taken down. And I was very offended by that. And I have to laugh now because when I drive down the streets in the small town where we live, the brethren have wreaths on their doors now and on their Facebook pages for their businesses, which again, they have Facebook pages. Oh my gosh. Anyway, it will say, "We want to wish you a Merry Christmas." And all I can think is, oh, another corner turned. Cool. Now you guys can celebrate Christmas. It'll be just a matter of time before their houses have lights on them and trees in the windows, I'm sure. But anyways, growing up for me, Christmas was very wicked. So there you have it. Christmas in the cult.
How can you support Get a Life podcast? You can donate internationally via PayPal at www.paypal.me/Get a Life podcast. PayPal also has a QR code that can be scanned. Or donate to our Get a Life podcast GoFundMe. If you're in a high-demand religious group and need help, please go to oliveleaf.network. To share your story or be a guest on the show, email info.getalife@proton.me. Check out www.get-a-life.net for Get a Life merchandise, books, and ways to support or get support. Please remember to like this video, subscribe to Get a Life, and comment.